Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you Gator Grannies out there in television radio world. Welcome to the Big Puzzle Radio Show. My name is Barry Prince, coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia, broadcasting to the facilities of People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on ShakenCreekRadio.com. Thanks for joining in today. We are viewer-supported stations, folks, so if you like what we're doing over here, please hit the donation button. I know that the station would really appreciate it. I am joined today by a garlic farmer who's out in his field right now working, and he has taken time to join me today. I'm talking about Frank Vaughn. I've had Frank on many times in the past, and I really enjoy my conversation with him. Thanks for taking time out of your farming duties to join us today, Frank. I've never interviewed somebody standing out in the middle of a field, so this is a first time for me, and welcome to the show. We're going to talk about the People's Party of Canada today and how fast the party is gaining momentum. And one of the first questions I like to put to people that are involved with the party, and Frank is a PPC candidate, is why you got involved with this party, Frank, in the beginning. Welcome to the show, sir.
Well, thank you very much. And I just want to issue a correction first. You're not taking time out of my day. My day ain't stopping. I'm just talking to you while I do it.
Well, you're multi-talented.
Oh, yeah, like I'm bent over double, pulling garlic out of the ground as we speak. But in answer to your question, the reason I got involved with the People's Party is that it's I'm sick of politics as usual, and I have been most of my life. I haven't really felt like I had a political home. You're always sort of making the most desirable of a batch of undesirable options. And there's been times in my life where I've liked options, I've voted locally because I liked the person that was running, not the party. Like, I've been all over the place, but in general, as I get older, I get more and more sick of it. And what the People's Party does, for me at least, is it allows me to express myself and to attempt to address my constituents directly and represent them directly. I don't have to go through some party apparatus, HQ, that tells me what to say and how to say it. The chief criteria that we're trying to develop amongst our people is that they exercise good judgment and they share Canadian values. And that's pretty much all that's been expected of me so far. It's been a pretty easy adaptation, and I've spent a lot of time conversing with people all across this country that have been involved, and I've spent time talking to Max, and I've spent time talking to headquarters, and I find that all these people are genuinely good people, in spite of what you might hear online from people who have never taken the time to give them a call or ask them any questions. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answers why I'm involved.
Well, I think that most people that are involved with the party now would resonate with what you're saying here, Frank, that I'm looking at the people that are getting involved in this party, and I look at the level of intelligence with these people and who's getting involved in their backgrounds, and I see very, very solid, very intelligent people getting involved with this party, because the platform of the party is now starting to resonate with Canadians coast to coast. And I see that in general conversations with people that a couple months ago they hadn't even heard of the PPC, but now they're aware of the party and they're starting to pay attention to what the party's saying. And henceforth, we're seeing the party grow at a very, very impressive rate. I'm on board with this party because, number one, I have been so skeptical and so against what I see going on in the political world that it makes me sick. But I've had a conversation with Mr. Bernier. And you know what? My feeling from talking with that man, that he was genuine. I laid out all my concerns to Maxine. He took a half an hour of his day and listened to what I had to say. And the feeling I got about the gentleman was that his interests truly are in the future of Canada. So myself, Frank, over the next couple months, I'm going to make a point of interviewing candidates from the PPC party. I'd like to get a wide range of people's opinions, and I'd like to hear what their constituents or their future constituents are saying across this country. So that's kind of what I'm going to be doing with this show over the next couple months. And you being one of the, star candidates right now in the PPC, not that I want to go to your head, but you are. It's good to talk to you today, sir. Very good. I see a lot of good things happening with this party right now. I have a great deal of respect for some of the people that are getting involved. So I see a wave growing in this country, Frank, right now. People are sick of it, just absolutely sick of what they see going on?
Well, you don't have the ability to pick a different drink. You're offered four flavors of Kool-Aid, and that's all you get. And that's what we constitute political choice in this country. We don't have any choice. We have a choice of implementation, but the agenda is always the same that's on offer, and it's getting worse as time goes by, to the point now where, I mean, Andrew Scheer shoots a video, and he looks exactly like our prime minister. He's got his legs all crossed, nice and prim, very aware of not man-spreading. He's got that gender identity stuff going on. He's playing identity politics all day long. Like, I encourage people, I haven't made a video yet, but I want to review the Conservative Party platform. And so I went to their website and I was looking, and there's no platform. It's just Andrew Scheer makes statement on the anniversary of India's independence, and Andrew Scheer makes a statement on the anniversary of Pakistani independence. Andrew Scheer makes a statement on the anniversary of Acadian Independence Day or Remembrance Day, and that's all it is. There's no, here's what I'm going to do, here's how I'm going to pay for it. And I reviewed the Green Party platform. I'm going to do the NDP and the Liberals. And the thing is we're the only party that has a platform that's realistic and costed. We tell you how we're going to do it and what we're going to do very specifically. I think all parties should do that well ahead of an election so the electorate can be informed and have a choice.
Yep. You don't hear anything coming out of the mainstream parties as far as some of the problems we've got going into in this country right now. I mean, it's just rhetoric being repeated by both parties. I don't hear much different coming out of the Conservatives than the Liberals. And really, if you look at what's going on with Andrew Scheer right now, there's a lot of people that are becoming very disillusioned with his stand on a lot of prime issues, is what I'm seeing. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, Frank, to see a couple Conservatives cross the floor here in the next couple of weeks, because I know there's a lot of Conservative candidates that have had enough, that are just seeing nothing but the same rhetoric out of Scheer as you hear out of Trudeau. So really, right now, I'm looking at the People's Party, and people are starting to really pay attention, and that's very cool in my world. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that's why we attract everybody. Like, the conference last weekend that we were all at, there's an interview with, first off, there's a guy by the name of Professor David Haskell. He was approached by the Conservative Party and asked to run for them. They wanted him in, I believe it's Cambridge, badly. And so he said, okay, if I run, I'm going to talk about this, immigration. I'm going to talk about this topic. And they said, no, you're not going to talk about any of those topics. You're just going to shut up and run. And he quit and he joined us. There's a man who is a Canadian veteran. He served in more campaigns than I could remember after meeting him for 5 minutes. And he was one of the people that stood behind our new veterans platform. And he is a former Conservative Party MP. He served in from 2011 to 2015. And there's another fellow who is a former Liberal MP who just, David Haskell interviews him. You can search it on David Haskell's channel. But he came over to us because the Liberal Party no longer represents what he considers liberal values. They're far leftist. They're not liberals anymore. And I couldn't agree with that more, because I don't narrow myself into being conservative. I have a lot of different points of view, but they're not represented in Canadian politics. Like, I identify with classical liberalism, and I identify with classical conservatism, and I can respect somebody who has the courage to say that the Liberal Party is no longer liberal. That's a truth. And they're welcome in our party. And there's people who supported the NDP in previous elections, either because they liked their local candidate, or if they disagreed with everything that Jack Layton was trying to do, they at least thought the man cared about Canada. I know I did. I know I thought he cared about the country. And I thought he was a good Canadian, and I would have spent 80% of my time trying to stop everything he was trying to do. But, I thought he was a decent Canadian. Those NDP feel disenfranchised with the party under Singh, since it's not even just Singh, it's Mulcair's leadership too, which drove them to this. And they've left, and they know our platform, and they come to the PPC. Mm-hmm. So these are, this party's about Canadians. It's about putting nation above party. And we're attracting those people. If we can just get them to read about us and we can just get them to have a look at the platform, that's generally all it takes.
Well, we've got to have a big push. We've got to have a big push to get Maxine into the national debates or the election debates coming up. I honestly believe, Frank, that we could see almost a Trump-style event happen in Canada if he's allowed into these debates and he gets his platform out in front of people that aren't getting that platform right now because of media bias. I think you're going to see a lot of Canadians say to themselves that everything this man's saying makes sense, that none of these platforms are being brought forward by the mainstream media or the mainstream parties. I think that's our biggest mission right now, is to get him into these debates so Canadians can really hear what this man is talking about. And if we can do that, I think you're going to see something really crazy happen in Canada.
Well, you don't have
not crazy, right now. Not crazy, but crazy in a good way. Go ahead, Frank.
No, it's just it's a lack of choice, right? So all four parties, they're all in favor of the Paris Climate Treaty. And they argue over who is going to best implement it. And even though Andrew Scheer campaigned on getting us out of it, now his platform, which has the most words, as he proudly bragged, he said, "Our promise to keep the Paris Climate Accord has more words than the other parties, which means we care more," which I found really funny. More words, vote more words, 2019. But all four parties agree to United Nations dictating who we take for refugees. I would argue they all support not only the Compact on Migration, but also the Compact on Refugees. Mm-hmm. And these are decisions that are going to be made in New York without the say of the Canadian people. These are decisions being made by technocrats, and all of our parties seem dedicated to implementing them in one way or another. Where is the option to just say no, and that Canada has unique value? We are better than a lot of nations on this earth, and we want to keep it that way. Where's that option, and what is wrong with saying that? It's just the truth. We are better. And if we want to keep it this way, we have to start being better stewards. That's the message the PPC is trying to bring, and it unites people. Of all races, colors, religions, creeds, we bring people together. Again, I say, if people would just look, they would see it.
Well, a lot of people are starting to look, Frank. I see that, like I said, in general conversations I'm having with people now. Like I said, a couple months ago, these people hadn't even heard of the PPC. And now it seems to be a subject of conversation that when I bring it up with people, they're starting to pay attention. So all I can say at this point to Canadians and anybody that's listening, you have to listen to everything that's being said out there and weigh it out for yourself. Really look at what this platform is being presented to you as and what the mainstream political parties are continuing to say. What you're saying, Frank, is absolutely correct, that there is no difference between the mainstream parties the way I see it right now. We don't have a choice. We have to shake it up or we're going to lose what we got. And as far as the NDP goes, wow, can you imagine having a guy that's not allowed in India being as your prime minister? Can you imagine?
Very inconvenient.
It's very inconvenient. I was looking actually at the committee there that was set up by the Trudeau government to pick who's going to be in the election debates, and it's of course it's headed up by David Johnston, who also has the Rideau Hall Foundation, and just conveniently, just after he was appointed as the head of this committee, he received $3 million from the Trudeau government. Have you seen that information, Frank?
I haven't had a chance to get into it deep yet, but if
it's
true.
There. It's there in black and white. I'll send you the link. They were given $3 million immediately, and $7 million more promised in the very near future from the Trudeau government.
Well, that committee was set up
to
push back against populism. It happened 3 weeks after we set up the party.
Exactly.
So we announced the party.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So there's no conflict of interest there.
Nothing to see there, Frank, at all. It's a coincidence.
Yeah, just shut your mouth. Keep your eyes shut. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of you.
Hey, who is it? The Raptors are the thing to really be concerned about, Frank, because that's our future.
Right? Absolutely.
And the Maple Leafs and whoever else that you're distracted by. I haven't watched a professional sports game now, Frank, in about 5 years. Honest to God, I used to love watching hockey. I used to love watching baseball, but it's been about 5 years for now. And I've watched anything like that on TV. What a destruction that is in our society. How to pit society against each other over something so trivialous as a team. But we see these divisions everywhere we look in society. It's just one that is. But yeah.
Well, I think there's a place for it. I just don't think it's supposed to be a replacement for thinking.
Well, you know, it used to be when I was growing up, we played hockey because we loved the game. And now I see these athletes getting $5 or $10 million a year, and it's not enough for them. You know, and when the NHL went on strike there that one year, that was it. I said, hey, you know, $5 million ain't good enough for you. I ain't going to ever watch this again. And I haven't. I just don't want to be watched. I love playing the game, Frank. I play hockey all winter long. I love it.
I know, but you do.
Yeah. But to support some guy that's making $5 million a year and society idolizes these people.
Barry?
In our society. Yeah, just hang on. Let me just finish my thought there, Steve. We see young people, tens of thousands of young people every year having their hearts broken because they haven't made it to the NHL. That their whole focus since they start playing hockey is, I got to make it to the big time. And when they don't make it, the effect that has on their life, we never talk about that. But yeah, Steve, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, don't forget about the language.
I don't think we've slipped yet, have we?
Well, you did there once, but...
I did?
Uh-huh. That's all right, though. Don't forget about it.
Okay, well, if I did, I try not to use foul language on the show, but if I did, I'm sorry. I don't remember what I just said, so it must have been in the heat of the moment. But anyways, yeah, go ahead, Frank, and we'll let you talk for a minute here. Just add a few thoughts about what I see going on.
No, I just would like to see people get more engaged. There's other countries in the world. An example that always comes to mind is Switzerland, where the people are highly motivated to be involved in their government and the decisions it makes. And they still have recreation. They still have their drinks. They still go out shooting on the weekends. They're allowed to do that there, too. And they're civically motivated, and they're empowered. Like, it's part of the problem that we face is a general sense of apathy where people feel powerless to exert change and to exert influence. And in this modern time, when we're all interconnected, we have social media, we have shows like this, we have channels like mine, we do have power. We're far more powerful to influence events than we think we are. And instead, we're distracted by a plethora of things that are meant to keep us from, I think, realizing that power and achieving it and doing something with it and reaching out into society and making change. And I know people have always used that word change. Politicians especially love to use it. But we're moving into new times, and the potential is quite unlimited. And that apathy needs to be overcome, because in my opinion, there's no excuse anymore. I'm a garlic farmer in Eastern Ontario. I'm about as sweaty and dirty as I could possibly get right now talking to you. But I know that I have a greater influence than a lot of people out there who are living in the city and walking very clean lives. I know the enemy's watching me. I know one of the things that made me jump into the candidacy, and while I'm not going to get into details, some force of power out there sent a recognizable celebrity to get me into a meeting to say basically he wanted to run as the candidate in my riding, and I was the CEO of my EDA. And I said, sure, I'll meet with you. So he takes me out, and we go to this talk. There's a couple hundred people in the room. He introduces me, makes me feel really good. Then we go to this meeting. And long story short, he tries to get me to commit to committing electoral fraud. He wanted me to get a network of business people together to pay him for services that he would not deliver. And if I did so, he'd be the candidate in my riding. Mm. And I said to him, that sounds illegal as hell. And he said, okay, well, I guess it's a short conversation. And later on, I wrote an email and I said, that is very illegal. I don't want anything to do with that. And instead of fighting with me, he just said, understood. And he went his separate way. Mm. And that was the last I spoke of him. But it's a double-edged sword. If I had have agreed, I'm pretty sure I was on the record, it would have been bad. It would have been the end. And when I realized that someone out there was willing to go to that extent, I might as well just run. Might as well just be in. At least people can vote for me.
Well, it takes a lot of courage.
World. It's a dirty world, Barry.
I know it is, Frank. And it takes courage for anybody.
This party is clean. That's why I'm here. And if this party betrayed its values, I would leave in a heartbeat. And I can say that freely, and my leader won't condemn me for it. The only thing holding us together is trust, because that's all there is in this world. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah, well, hey, it really, Frank, like I said earlier in the beginning of the show, as I've looked at a lot of the people, I've gone through the list of candidates. I'm looking at their links. I'm looking at who these people are and what their background is. And I am seeing nothing but positive people getting involved in this party. People that, from what I can see, seem to be very legitimate, very straight-shooting individuals. And I've only looked at about 10 or 12 of them so far, but I'm looking at their pages, and I'm looking into the information behind them. And what I'm seeing is very, very positive. So to me, I say, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I have a good sense of common sense. But I look at all these individuals that are getting involved in the party, and some of them are very, very smart people, like Mr. Mansoor. I hope I pronounced his name correctly.
It's good.
And Laura Lynn Thompson. I listen to her talk, and when she speaks, it seems like a river of knowledge coming out of her mouth, and she's making nothing but common sense points. I look at everybody else that's getting involved, and I see a real good group of people forming to really try and save the country. And I've never been a supporter of politics. I know that politicians will lie to you through their teeth to get elected, but I see something different in this party, and that's why I'm behind it, buddy, and that's why I want over the next little while to get people in from the party, and I want to hear a consensus of what Canadians are saying from coast to coast, what their concerns are. So kind of what I'm doing here for the next little while, Frank, and it was good to start with you today, because I know that you're tied in very closely with a lot of people in the party, and hope to be working with you in the next little while.
Yeah, I'm happy to. Glad to be here, and like I say, that's the best thing that people can do. Go to peoplespartycanada.ca and look at the candidates. Look at the policy. I don't need to sell you anything if you just read it. That's all.
Well, then, of course, I'm getting all this pushback. I'm getting all this pushback, Frank, against these people that are into the Jira movements and everything else. And you know what? There's a lot of credence to what they're doing. There's a lot of information there that I've looked at that is true. But to get the Canadian public to get involved in something at this point, right now, 2 months away from the election, is going to be impossible. And right now, there is no other viable choice in Canada. Nobody that's saying what Maxime Bernier is saying, nobody's putting out a common sense platform like he is. So until we, you know, there is things in our system that don't work for the people. But at this point, I honestly feel that until we can actually make some changes in the future that benefit the Canadian people in the way our country is run, he is the only viable choice. And the man has got my support at this point. Until he does something that goes against what he's saying, he's got my point.
Yeah, and there's always going to be somebody that's unhappy and say you don't go far enough. But generally, they're sitting on the sidelines and they ain't getting anything done. We have to deal with what is. I've heard this notion repeated a lot of times that the government we have of the day is du jour, and it's not actually legally constituted. But name me a government that's ever been legally constituted from the American Republic, which started as a rebellion that nobody in the world recognized. They had to fight to claim what was right. And what we have is a government right now that actually has the authority to pass regulations and ruin your life. And if you defy them, that's the power that's going to come down on you. So our approach is to try and get elected to that body so that we can make change. So far, our elections have been clean. I've worked elections numerous times, and they are at least up to 2015. There's one thing I can guarantee is nobody stole that election for Trudeau. He won it fair and square, whether people like it or not. That I can verify, but maybe it won't be that way in 2019 because of the expatriate voting, but no one really knows how that's going to go, if they'll even vote or participate or which way they might go. A lot of immigrant communities are very conservative. We have a lot of immigrants in our party for that reason.
We've got to
try and do something to push back.
I don't know if you looked at the poll that Billy Joyce put out on his timeline there yet, Frank, but an independent radio station in Billy's neck of the woods did a poll, and on that poll, they stated who you're going to vote for in the next federal election. Of course, they had the Liberals, Conservatives, Greens, and then they had other. Well, I think the Conservatives had 12 or 14%. The Liberals are maybe 10%. The Greens maybe 12% or 5% or something like that. But the other was 71%. 71% other. So who are they talking about, Frank? But you're not
going to... Well, I think if the Internet had... If the Internet had its way, Bernie... Yeah. Well, if the Internet had its way, I think Bernie would be Prime Minister already. There's definitely a lot more motivation in our camp than there is for anybody else. The issue is, people also got to hit the streets, have the conversations in the coffee halls and the pubs and restaurants, street corners, do door knocking, whatever it is. You have to just see a lot of, like, I've learned that with my platform is that, you know, you have so many subscribers and you have so many people following along, but there's a lot of people out there who still don't know who you are. And there's a lot of people out there who still don't know who the PPC is. And you might not reach them until you knock on their door, right? So
good point.
It's something that has to be worked out on multiple fronts. It has to be, you can't just preach to the choir. You have to get outside of your bubble and start talking to people. And face-to-face people, amazingly, are a lot nicer than they are online. They actually want to listen, you know?
I got to step away for half a second here, Frank, just to let my dog in because he's barking at me. So hold on, I'll be right back in 2 seconds. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
Keep barking. No problem. It's crazy.
Come on, buddy, get in. Get in. Sorry.
Sorry, Barry.
I apologize for that, man.
But you got to take care of the animals.
Yeah, you got to take care of them. You know what, Frank? I've said it many times on my show. You know, I've got two T-shirts now. I went and got another one. I've got Trudeau for Prison 2019. And you know what? I wear that T-shirt in public all the time. And everybody that sees that T-shirt wants to engage. And total strangers are coming up and going, where do I get the T-shirt? I'm getting comments from strangers I've never talked to before that ask me if I need a rope, you know? It's the most effective weapon because it allows me to engage with the public. And immediately, as soon as I start a conversation with them, I bring up the PPC. Immediately, I bring up some of the platforms of the PPC as opposed to what people are hearing on mainstream media. And it really is starting to garner attention. You're absolutely right. The most effective way that we can reach people is face-to-face, having conversations. But you guys go out and get a T-shirt that says Trudeau for Prison for 2019, and you will have people engaging in conversations because the general public now is very aware of, unless they've got their head completely buried in the sand, are very aware of the nefarious activities going inside our government. I mean, one only has to watch the committee on the ethics committee's shows this week on TV, and that was brought on by, it was broadcast on Global and CTV. The absolute corruption inside our government is being exposed to the main public through mainstream. They're being forced to expose this, so it presents us an opportunity really to offer alternatives, Frank, to people, Frank.
Mm.
Yeah,
no, I
get
totally
that T-shirt,
agree.
Man. Wear it, folks. Honestly, anybody that wants to engage in conversation, go out and spend $25. Get a T-shirt printed up and walk around in public and see the response you'll get from the public. It's amazing. Go ahead, Frank. Have you got yours yet?
No, I don't have that T-shirt. I've got other T-shirts, but I do it in a different way. But it's, I mean, even to the hardcore liberal staunch supporters, Trudeau's just an embarrassment to them. He doesn't represent them very well. And though most of them that I know are probably still going to vote for him come 2019, just to stop the dreaded Andrew Scheer, because they, you know, they buy into that narrative, right? That he's actually bad. They don't realize that he's actually just the same. They could vote for him, and their conscience would be clean because he won't change anything. You have to try and tap into that and get people to listen. And you know, one of the things I find in my riding is people know me here for who I am in the community, and it wasn't always just garlic. I used to grow tons and tons of vegetables. I've nourished people's kids from birth until their 10th or 15th birthdays. It's very hard for them to label me as some kind of racist, raving misogynist. And if they don't like me, man, they can just meet my wife. They'll like her just fine. So I'm able to communicate with people a little bit more openly. And a lot of people are scared, Barry, and rightly so. This cloak of political correctness has descended on Canadian discourse. And, you know, some people come up to me and they they say, Frank, I watch your work there. You know, I don't interact with it because I don't want the consequences. I don't want to fight with my family. I don't want to fight with my coworkers. But I really love what you're doing, and I support you. But they say it, like, in a really hushed voice. They think that these bad things are going to descend on them, and I guess they do. Other branches of my family just won't even talk to me anymore, simply because I want to discuss certain political things, but they're far left, and they don't want to hear. You know, they think they're the tolerant ones, but they're incredibly intolerant. And there's certain friends of mine that just they won't speak to me anymore. But if that's all it takes, and this has been my attitude all along, if that's all it takes for somebody to break off communication is one disagreement, then they weren't really your friends in the first place.
Exactly.
And you'll find that there's other people out there that can take their place and that you can have disagreements with. Like there's the guy who's the vice president in my EDA, he's much more libertarian than I am. And we have had some very heated discussions along those lines, but we're still neighbors and we're still friends, you know, like it hasn't, we've never broken relations because of a disagreement. You can have disagreements and still work towards a common cause.
Well, disagreement is a healthy thing, Frank, but if we're focusing on the same issue, the disagreements will be put aside. Now, you know, there's lots of people I talk with that I don't agree on certain things, but we do focus on certain issues, and those divisions that we see between us, we make a point of setting those aside. So we can talk about the main issue, and that's, of course, what's going on inside our government. Good point. Really good point. So how many heads of garlic have you pulled out so far today, Frank? I mean, how many do you do every hour? I've never been a garlic farmer. I'm just kind of interested to know.
I don't count. If I count, it's depressing. The fact of the matter is, Barry.
You do it all by hand.
I do it all by hand, and this year's just, it's terrible. Like, it was, so we found out my wife was pregnant in the fall, and we used to plant together, and then all of a sudden, you know, she had morning sickness and everything, and she couldn't work, so it was just me, and then the winter came in early, so I didn't get it all covered with straw. And then we led into where I am, it was a very hot and dry June. It wasn't so much hot, it was just a normal June, but it was very dry. And that went into July, so it really sort of affected the size of the garlic. And because of the political stuff and because of the podcasting, to be completely honest with you, I've kind of lost. I don't have the quality now. Like this stuff, I'm going to have to can it, dehydrate it, mince it, put it in. I'm going to have to sell it a completely different way, and it's kind of a nightmare. Like it's just I've pretty much sacrificed my farm for family and country this year, and I don't quite know what I'm going to do. If I don't win in October, well, I know it. I'll survive, but I've bit off quite a bit, so I don't count anymore.
We're going to be positive, Frank, and say that your future constituents, if they really hear the message that you're putting out, that you will be elected. And let's just be very positive with that. And sorry to hear about your crop this year. I know that you've had the best thing in your life happen, though, with the arrival of your new son. So, nothing better in life, buddy. Nothing. And that's what we live for.
No, not at all. And then, no, I don't regret one minute of it.
Oh, buddy, I tell you, I had children of my own, and it was the best time in my life. I couldn't do it again now because of the patience it takes, but you'll find out all about that.
Yeah, it hasn't been too bad so far, but I hear it gets more interesting as they get smarter.
It does. It gets really interesting in the future, but I'm sure your child's going to have good upbringing. So,
yeah, I think we'll be okay with certain
really, you know, I ask myself every day, and I really kind of question myself sometimes about whether the Canadian public has the intestinal fortitude to actually get off their butts and do something about what's going on in this country, Frank, because I see so many people that I get into conversations with them and they go, yeah, I know something's wrong. Yeah, Trudeau's corrupt. And yeah, he's destroying the country. And I say, well, what are you doing about it? And I hear this all the time. Well, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm just one person. There's nothing we can do. And that's the farthest thing from the truth, folks, because we do not know the power we have. We really don't. And if we can embrace that power, we can make changes. Conversations with people in general public is the most powerful weapon I find that I have right now, Frank, because people are really starting to pay attention to what's going on in the country. Even if they're inside the matrix, they're starting to realize that what's going on is going to really directly affect their future. Even though it hasn't come to fruition, they're starting to see it. So I think this is the most important time in Canadian history right now that we can get this information out to people and really put your foot to the floor, folks, if you believe in what we're talking about. I know there's probably a couple conservatives out there that probably tuned out because of what we're saying today. Well, I can't do anything about that, but I've looked at the Conservative Party. I've looked at the background of Andrew Scheer, and we all know what Trudeau's about. We all know what Singh's about, and Elizabeth May, what a lady living in a fairy tale world, are our prospective prime ministers. We've got a big problem.
Yeah. Well, and further to what you're saying about people being empowered, what they've got to realize is, For instance, if somebody's telling you, Barry, that they admire you for what you do, and, you know, they say things like they could never do that. Like, I get a lot of that. I get a lot of people saying, oh, Frank, you've got the voice, and you say things in ways that I could never say, and just the way you convey it. And, like, I do hear that a lot. My response is always the same. It's all fake. It's all learned. It didn't come naturally. I had to learn it. I had to self-improve, and I had to learn how to talk so I didn't sound like, when I started out, I sounded like Trudeau. I was just a stuttering mess, and I didn't have good eye contact, and when I was a kid, I was a bit of a dork, and I observed myself, and I learned how to better convey things, and I improved, and I think most people are capable of that sort of a journey, that they can improve, they can get better, they gotta be able to look at themselves critically. But my overarching point is that they can do things that they think they can't do. Saying that you can't do it is just an excuse for not doing it. You can do it, and you can do it better every single day. And the reason I know that is because that's my life. That's the story of my existence. I don't come from some kind of great background. Everything I have, I've made. And the voice that people admire, I've made that too, because that wasn't a natural feature. And I don't say that to be braggadocious. I say that to say that if I can do it, every single other person that I encounter can do it too. They just have to try it and be unafraid of embarrassment. Embarrassment comes with it. That's no big deal. And be unafraid of being wrong. You can be wrong. That's no big deal. You can fix all that. What you can't fix is silence.
Silence is consent, my friend. And yeah, you know, I still babble a little bit when I get on my shows, but I'm not a professional radio guy. I'm just in here trying to share some common sense thoughts with people. And I don't ever profess to be an expert on anything, because I'm not. But I know enough about everything to be able to carry on a conversation with people. And there's a lot of issues that need to be talked about. We're talking about political, but there's all kinds of other things that we could be talking about today, Frank, that we don't have time to talk about. But it seems like it doesn't matter if we're talking about any issue that we're seeing right now in society, in our world. They seem to be all connected. And if you really start putting all the dots together, you'll find out what I'm saying is true. So having you on today, I've listened to lots of Frank's videos, and the way he articulates speech, and I asked him before the show started today, I said, Frank, are you reading off a teleprompter when you do your vids? And he tells me, no. Well, I could never do that, Frank. I couldn't. I don't have the ability to retain that information and bring it up. And I say kudos to what you're doing, and anybody that hasn't looked at Frank's videos, I urge you to go tune in and listen to some of his videos, because he makes a lot of sense to me. Go ahead, Frank. I'm not trying to bring up your show a lot, but I do admire what you're doing. And a lot of what you touch on really makes sense to me. You cover really good issues. And the fact that you can do that out of your brain amazes me, because, like I said, I could never do that.
Well, I'll set aside for the minute that you said that you can't do what I do. I think maybe you can. But if you can't do what I do, you can do what Barry does. And you're doing it. And that's the important thing, is that you're doing something. You're putting yourself out there. And your influence, like, you can influence one person, and that one person could go on to influence thousands or hundreds of thousands. It's a feedback cycle. That's kind of the organic nature of communication in the modern age, is that one person can say something, and he can reach 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people. But those people are affected, and they then transmit their own message, and that message is influenced by what you've done. And vice versa, you're influenced by other people. So all this different messaging is going out there, and people are absorbing it, and And that is that's the new form of communication. It's a completely decentralized media marketplace that we're trying to make. And, of course, we face obstruction. There's tech giants that are standing in our way, and they're trying to stifle the organic dynamic of the Internet. But thus far, they've failed to a certain degree, and we're still free to talk. So, I mean, my point is that people just need to be unafraid. Like, people are afraid of consequences, and I'm doing fine. I mean, I'm still out here in my garden. I've still got my family. I've still got my life. No lasting harm has come to me because of my political involvement over the last 4 years. And that's just the truth, you know? So what are you afraid of? Put yourself out there. Your silence, as you say, is consent, but it won't protect you either. Silence is not a protection.
Absolutely.
It doesn't help.
Well, you know, the price of freedom is vigilance, Frank. And I forget who said that, but it resonates with me all the time that you know, your silence isn't going to protect you. That silence is consent. And if you're consenting what's going on right now, then I really don't know what to say to you. I really don't. One question I wanted to ask you today, Frank, what really is going on at the upper echelons of our RCMP in Canada? Why hasn't a criminal charge been brought against Justin Trudeau? And I know the answer, but I want to hear your answer on this.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I would recommend that people go to Google and they type in RCMP scandals. And there's a whole Wikipedia page. And I know Wikipedia is imperfect and whatever, but there's a whole Wikipedia page. Wikipedia is imperfect for things that everybody's paying attention to, and it can be manipulated. For stuff that nobody's paying attention to, it does a pretty good job. And the RCMP scandal page will give you a comprehensive history of RCMP malfeasance, basically, and it's enlightening reading. I think everybody should read that for themselves. And I think the reason that Trudeau is still walking is because, well, for one thing, I don't actually believe the Conservative Party of Canada wants him charged. I don't believe it. I don't. I think that what we're watching is theater. This SNC stuff. Trudeau's been caught in a lie, 100%. He broke the law. It's all over the place. Everybody's talking about it. But my point has always been the revolving door between SNC and government and between Lombardier and government goes back decades. Mm-hmm. And just because the people in those administrations didn't get charged doesn't mean that we can't actually go and research what they were up to. I've done that. I've made videos about that subject. I've told the history of SNC malfeasance through the Harper years and back before Harper. Now into the Trudeau years. Trudeau's just carrying the torch. That's why Andrew Scheer had SNC as a sponsor of one of his events, and that's why Andrew Scheer had SNC coming to one of his junkets until everybody found out and he canceled them and made them disappear. That's why Andrew Scheer was having meetings with SNC in private after this story broke, Jody Wilson-Raybould and the whole thing. So to me, it's nobody's going to change anything, Barry. And charges aren't going to change anything. But even at that, they don't want the charges. I don't think they want the charges because nobody really wants it to change. Business as usual is going to carry on because it always has. Harper did business with SNC when they were under international sanction. He wasn't allowed to. He did it anyway. Gave him a $1.4 billion defense contract. Nobody's talking about that. Why? Because this big thing, hate Trudeau. He's easy to hate. That's the message. Hate his face. That's what you got to do. He's the worst guy in Canadian history. But it's a distraction for something much bigger. And I'm no fan of Trudeau. I'm not trying to make excuses for the guy. But the story is so much bigger. And if everybody's spreading, you know, everybody's busy making memes and making videos about his ethics violations and the law and everything else, in my opinion, you're basically doing the bidding of the media masters because they're the ones that are driving the story. It's funny, Barry, and I don't intend this as a direct criticism of anybody, but because I do it too. The media still steers what we talk about, and that's a problem. When you look at social media, what are we talking about every day? What the mainstream media is telling us to. So they make headlines, and we share the articles all over the place, and we make videos responding to it. They're still dictating the terms in which we talk. And it's to me, that's a problem. That's one of the barriers, right? Because when it's the cage without bars. It's the cage that you can't see, where you're voluntarily. And I'm not saying it's not important. It's just I honestly think the answer is nobody wants anything to change. That's the short answer.
Yeah, I agree.
What is your answer? I'm more curious about your answer now.
That's a loaded question, you know, when you really, what you just said, Frank, really kind of, I agree with what you just said, that there's something much bigger going on here, and that what we're seeing right in front of our eyes right now is smoke and mirrors. It's a charade being played out. It's the same charade that's been played out for how many years, where we have the conservatives get in and they're doing wrong, so the liberals are the new guys, and the liberals get in and they're doing wrong, and then the conservatives get in. But nothing is ever going to change. As far as the RCMP goes, to me, what Trudeau has done, even though this doesn't play maybe into their narrative, but he has criminally broken the law. He's directly criminally broken the law. And there is absolutely no excuse, if we have the rule of law in Canada, that he should not be charged at this point, because the evidence is more than overwhelming. So you're right. They're going to probably try and brush it under the rug. You've got Scheer coming out and making statements like, oh, I sent a letter to the RCMP. You hear other things on the internet that like seven Ontario, former Attorney Generals of Ontario, have requested an RCMP investigation, yet we still hear crickets. So I have to agree with you, Frank, that we're in almost a complete fascist state right now, that we're living under a basic dictatorship right now, but we don't see it. That's what I see.
Well, it's just a cage without bars. If you can, we enjoy libertine freedom, where we can
the illusion.
Drunk, we can get high, we can take liberties with whatever sex we want, boy, girl, whatever. We're allowed to do all these things, but what we actually think about our society is limited by those distractions. And when you actually do cut through, you're still having your mind controlled by the prevailing narrative of the day, which is incomplete. It's all sound bites. Mm-hmm. You can't do anything with sound bites, Barry. You ever had a business meeting that discussed details that lasted 5 minutes? I don't think so.
The illusion of freedom, Frank. You know, you think people think they're living in a free society. Well, you're free to go to work, pay your taxes. You can go home, turn on the TV, drink your beer, and shut up. And don't look over here, because we've got it under control. That kind of what I see in a nutshell. And unfortunately, the Matrix is so strong that so many people are still entwined in the Matrix. They're scared to step out of it. They're scared to speak against it, because they're going to be demonized. The weapon of political correctness. We see how that works in our society. We see how divided our society has become in the last few years. Well, people think this is just normal, but it's all being done by design, and it's all to perpetrate a certain agenda. And we see that agenda going on wherever we look in the world today, Frank. We see the same agenda going on with a slightly different face.
Well, it's all coming from New York and the United Nations.
Of course.
So they agree to these things. They say it's non-binding, but somehow all the national parliaments at the same time adopt the same policies. That's what non-binding means. It means don't look here.
Exactly. I'm going to get into a conversation with Ron here in the next hour about the United Nations. We're going to be talking a lot about that and how it's working in our society. And it's something that people really, a lot of people still hear the name United Nations and they think it's a good organization. But any research in the United Nations will change your thinking on that very quickly. And I urge people to do that, Frank.
Well, at the very least, it should.
Yeah, they should. They should take a couple hours.
They don't have our best interests at heart.
Well, really, all you have to do is go back and look at the League of Nations and where it all started, you know, and how that became the United Nations and the history of it and who's involved. And it's quite a bit of information to take in, but when you start looking at it, it'll really connect the dots. And I can't retain it all, but I've looked at it all, and it all makes sense to me. This has been a great show, Frank. I love getting you in. I really do. We've got about 9 minutes left in the show here today. Is there anything else that you want to talk about today that's really kind of picking your butt right now? Excuse my language.
No, I mean, if I was going to do that, I'd be complaining about how there's not enough time in every day. But I think one of the things that got overshadowed last weekend was the fact that we did unveil a veterans policy. And we had 42 veterans with us to do it. Our valiant service members who have been forgotten and screwed over by successive governments, whether it was Harper or Trudeau, they've never done very well. And we actually have a veterans policy that I would like to see people read and disseminate, because it was written by veterans for veterans, and it will actually put them first instead of refugees and foreign aid and $300 million for abortions in other countries.
Yeah.
We will put our people first. So that's something that sort of got glossed over because, you know, the CBC just wanted to talk about immigration. That's all they ever want to talk about.
We don't want to talk about the $930 million that Trudeau just obligated us to with another United Nations organization. I forget the exact name. I was reading the feed on that today. Just $930 million, Frank. Nothing. Peanuts in today's
world. And without asking you.
Without any... everything he's done, Frank. I mean, if you really want to start talking about what he's done in the last 4 years, everything that this man has done has been basically, in my world, an act of treason against the Canadian people. And we have no recourse in our system to hold them accountable. We can bitch. We can complain about it. We can talk till we're blue in the face, but we have no power. We're basically set up in a system that is a complete dictatorship. We have 9 hours every 4 years to determine who's going to be the next dictator. And that's got to change.
I agree.
Absolutely.
It does have to change.
Oh, it does. And until people can start to realize that, Frank, we're up against the wall. But I think we are starting to see a change now in people's thoughts. I have to be positive about it because I've got children coming in this country and growing up. You've got a newborn that's going to live in this country for the next how many years? And boy, what we see coming, we've got to stop. So I thank you for everything that you're doing and the courage, because it does take courage to do what we're doing these days, believe it or not, because we are going to be, I believe, attacked in the future, very, very near future. If we're not being attacked right now, we're being censored. So it's very important right now that we just keep doing what we're doing. I want you to share with people where they can see your videos and stuff, Frank, before we close out the hour.
Well, it's very, very easy. You can go to www.frankvaughn.ca. That's FrankVaughan. You got to get that A in there. If you get to frankvaughn.ca, you can find everything, the articles, the videos. It's all up there. There's a YouTube channel. I've got a Twitter account where I try to tweet every day, try to post something on Facebook, keep those things alive. But frankvaughn.ca is where it's at because that's the one venue they can't take away. It'll always be there.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we're going to close out this first hour. I'm going to take about a 3 or 4 minute break here, and I'm going to be back with Ron Stevens. I want to thank you, Frank, for joining me today. Always a pleasure talking to you, sir. And we'll see what happens here in the next couple months. I think we're going to have a very interesting time in Canada.
I agree, sir. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, folks. Folks, I'm going to take about a 3 minute break here and maybe 4 minutes, and I'll be back with Ron Stevens for the second hour. And we're going to talk about the United Nations and how its fingers are getting into all aspects of our society. Back in about 5 minutes. Well, welcome back to second hour, folks, and thanks again to Frank Vaughan for joining me the first hour. Good conversation as always. And like I said, go and have a look at what he's talking about. Some of the stuff you might not agree with, some you might. It's up to us to decipher. Anyway, second hour, I got a gentleman in that when I put it out on the memes that everybody's going, yahoo, Ron's back in. So there's people over here that really like hearing what you have to say, Ron. So I want to thank you for joining for an hour. And as usual, I'm looking forward to this conversation. And we talked off air. I don't know where we're going with this. We don't script anything. So you said we're going to go with it. So let's just go with it. First question, what do you think about the political situation in Canada today? How's that for a conversation started?
I'm not really interested in it because I've been busy trying to make you the apple pie we talked about earlier.
Yeah, how are you going to get it out here before it's got cooled down, buddy?
Well, I got a problem. I dug out my grandma's old apple pie recipe.
Uh-oh.
And my grandma's apple pie always put a smile on everybody's face when they ate it. So I thought, what the hell? I'll make grandma's pie for Barry. So I'm making the pie, and I ran into a problem. And I finally figured out why everybody smiled so hard when they ate grandma's pie. I'm missing an ingredient. Down near the bottom of the page, it said add shrooms. And I don't have any.
Well, I could send them to you, Ron. What do you need?
Well, I may just send you the pie, raw.
Are you trying to entice me to come to Ontario, buddy? Because you're talking homemade apple pie. You're hitting a very, very, very open nerve, I might say. I can remember what my grandmother's apple pies tasted like when I was growing up. And man, oh, man.
I know. The food was different.
It was different. It was made by hand. It was real food.
It was real food.
Yeah, lemon pie. My mom used to make lemon pies from scratch. Ron, I'll tell you, I would die for them, you know? But that, of course, was the big apple to finish your dinner. So no matter what was put on our plate at supper time, you made sure, even if it was liver, man. I remember them making liver, and I'd have to plug my nose to eat it. But then there was an apple pie sitting on the counter.
Yeah, and, you got to get through it.
It was discipline.
You want the pie?
What a big carrot to put in front of a 10-year-old boy's face, eh?
But you got to admit.
It worked.
Well, you got to admit that the people in the generations before us were a hell of a lot healthier than the generations today.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. They ate real food.
They worked hard. And they were healthy, and they didn't get Alzheimer's, and they weren't eating pharmaceuticals all the time. They were real men and women, and we've been evolved into
jellyfish.
Yeah, that's called wet spaghetti.
Yeah, or the zombie apocalypse.
There's no mind, spine, or spirit left in the people.
You remember, they brought out that movie, Zombie Apocalypse. That was about 15 years ago they brought the movie out. And, of course, everybody went and looked at it, and, wow, is this ever funny? Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, for years, they've been putting in front of our face where we're going with society, and this is just an example of it, because we see it now. We really do see a zombie apocalypse in our society.
Well, our town actually, about that time period when they were doing the zombie movies and that, our town, it's only 7,500 people, were going to have a zombie parade. And now, this much later, we're having the drag queens reading diversity and inclusion and fluidity to little kids like 3, 4, 5 years old. Which back in the day of our grandparents, they would have walked into the libraries and punched them out.
They would have shot him, Ron.
Yeah, well, I don't
know. There would have been people that would have been on. Well, there would have been people at that point. If we went and took 1960 civilians and put them into our classrooms today, a man and a woman from that era, they would be enraged, enraged at the changes that we've allowed to go on in our society. But they don't do it quick, Ron. They do it incrementally, slowly but surely. Piece by piece over the years.
They do it generationally. If you look at the first conference on human environment was 72. Then 20 years later, they had Rio. And 20 years after that, they had Rio 2. Right. In 76, they had Habitat 1 in Vancouver, which says that what's not sustainable, agriculture, private property, and so on and so forth. And then 20 years later, they had Habitat 2. And in 2016, they had Habitat 3. So they do this absolutely generationally. Right. And now they're running for the goal line. And the harder they run for that goal line, the more people, I don't care how stupid they are starting to go, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, so, I have to agree. We talked about that in the first. Excuse me. We talked about that in the first hour.
You going to make it?
I just took a sip of coffee and it went down the wrong hole, my friend.
Oh, because I was
a second here. I wasn't doing anything illegal. It was actually a sip of coffee and it went down the wrong
hole. No, I was concerned.
Just give me 10 seconds.
No, I have my fingers on 9/11 there. I didn't know.
9/11. Where have I heard about that before now?
Well, I want to call 911. I don't want you to go down.
9/11 and 911. Is there any kind of coincidence there?
No kidding.
Nothing to see there, right? Oh, wait a second. I never thought about that before. Wait a second. Hold on. Yeah, call 911.
Yeah.
9/11. There's the subject. We don't want to get into that one, Ron, because that'll be the rest of the hour. But we'd just be bringing up old wounds. But it's still one of the most barbaric situations in our society, where society is going about their lives day by day, when the biggest lie ever told to the human race is still being accepted or being forced down our throats. The fact that it's still going on, it tells you how much power the status quo has.
Well, one of my favorite things I ever saw, I think, was, and I think I probably mentioned it before, but when that guy was down in I forget what, what's the name of the town that Jones is in, whatever, in Texas. But a guy went anyways to the university on Kennedy's 50th anniversary of his death. And the reporter went in and he started asking the students, how they felt about the 50th anniversary of Kennedy's assassination. And not one student he talked to knew that Kennedy had been assassinated. All they said was, well, we just heard he died in office, while in office. And this is the school system. And it too works on the generational thing, right? So what we learned in school is in our heads. But then they bring in the next batch and they fill their heads with some other garbage. And that makes the big disconnect between the generations, which is a real problem. It's always been a problem ever since the public school system started. It's to divide our lineage, so to speak. You know, our grandparents told us stuff and then our parents told us stuff but all that's been split off now. There's no connection anymore.
They do not teach history in school anymore, because if they did, people would realize that history always repeats itself, and it does. And we're seeing history repeat itself right now, Ron, in a lot of ways.
It's the same thing. You know,
same thing being played over and over.
You know, I tell people there would never have been a World War II if Americans would have signed on to the League of Nations, right? But the American people at that point in time, after the First World War, still understood, because their grandparents were telling them, and we're a free country, and yada, yada, yada. And they still understood, the young people still understood why they fought the War of Independence. And then you had President Wilson running around, who was instituted the Fed, running around trying to get Americans to sign on to the League of Nations, saying that if you don't sign on to this, there's going to be another major war in the not-too-distant future. Well, how the hell does he know that? Because he got told that. Get it signed.
Right.
And they didn't sign on, and so there would have never been a World War II had America signed on to the League of Nations. But now we went from the League of Nations to the UN. Same criminals. That ran it, same criminals that started the war, same criminals that started the depressions, and now they want us to become global citizens.
I've done a little bit of research into the Second World War and the Bayer Corporation, how they were involved and how the Bush family was involved.
IBM.
And the Bush family, Granddaddy IBM Bush, how he was involved. And, yeah. And if you start looking at it all comes together. It's like, if you look at all the little pieces, and then it makes sense, you know.
Maybe
it's just a giant pawn, chess game, and we're the pawns.
When you think about the school system, you say, okay, like, who the hell makes up the curriculum? Who prints these books? Who puts the information in these books, and for what purpose? Then you realize that the school system... it's just an indoctrination system.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So we got to break that spell, and it is basically a spell that they put on the people. The people believe in what they're being taught, even though it's not even close. I mean, when I was a kid in school, and I loved this, you know, I always banging on scientists, right? People say, well, you can't chew out the scientists like that. Why not? Why can't I chew out the scientists? There's an old book that says, you know, we killed God because we had to, because we couldn't bring ecology forward if God existed. So we'll let people still, think God exists, but we had to kill him. And that was, what's his name, Nietzsche or whatever his name was, who got credit for killing God. But what it said was that we couldn't bring ecology forward if because ecology is the new religion of worshiping the creation, not the creator. And we're going to replace the priests with scientists. So just like you couldn't say anything negative about what the priest said, you can't say anything negative about what the scientist says. Well, when I was in school, I was taught that oil, I can't even believe a teacher stood in front of the class and read this, that oil comes from the rotting carcasses of dinosaurs. Hello?
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, so I'm supposed to believe the scientist, right? Uh-huh. You know? The world is burning up. Really?
You know, dinosaurs, what, they disappeared how many millions of years ago? And they're still gestating under the ground and creating oil for us. And if you want to buy that, I'll sell you that.
The dinosaurs were, I think they were 900 feet deep. There was a lot of dinosaurs.
Yes, there was. And yeah, we can't find many skeletons.
We can't find one anywhere, but they supplied a lot of oil. And then the scientists came out and told us not to eat eggs or butter, even though we grew up on eggs and butter. And people believed this garbage because people went to the doctor. Like, this is the old propaganda machine, right? That Jew, Bernays, who came up with marketing. You know, you just tell a lie and propagandize the hell out of it and just keep puking it out 24/7 and people believe it. All of a sudden, people have been eating eggs and butter since they were born. All of a sudden, the magazines tell you, oh my God, your cholesterol's over the, oh, you're going to die, and so on and so forth. All of a sudden, everybody's running to get pharmaceuticals from the doctors for their cholesterol levels and yada, yada, yada. And like 20 years or 30 years later, they come out and went, oh, well.
By the way,
it's okay to eat butter and eggs now. The dinosaurs are still rotting. What?
You better not eat your hamburgers anymore there, Ron, because this is the vegan world we're coming into now. We can't be eating beef. Can't be eating any kind of meat, man. Come on. Get with it, buddy.
Well,
see, this big push in society now. What a joke. You go to you go get a hamburger and you can get a plant-based hamburger. You're going to eat that, guys?
Well, I'm telling you, it's animal farts. I had a rabbit fart in the front yard. and I'm not kidding you. The temperature went up so high, I had to run in the house and turn on the air conditioner. It was terrible.
Listen, Ron, they're going to be taxing our exhaled air real soon. Okay?
They are now.
Well, they're going to ramp that up a little bit, and then we'll be taxed for the amount of air we breathe every year, or every hour. We'll be having monitors put on us, and if we take in more than the allowable mouthfuls of air during the hour, we'll be taxed on that. Because, you know, you got to save the planet. Got to slow these people down, man. Make them realize they can't go jogging anymore.
People would understand that in all of this stuff that the scientists are doing is all based on the precautionary principle. So they can come up with any line of garbage, i.e. global warming,
mm-hmm. and
it's based on the precautionary principle, and the precautionary principle does not require any evidence. Okay, period. There's no evidence required. But we're doing it, you know, as a precaution. It could happen. It might happen.
But we don't have any evidence. The scientists agree that man is warming up the planet.
Well, science. I mean, look at the weather in Alberta.
David Suzuki said so. Come on, man.
Well, when they told me that Canada was warming twice as fast as the rest of the planet, and because they want to ramp up the school kids to have their protests, I got a note from a guy in Australia saying he's freezing his butt off down there. Right?
it's a global emergency right now, Ron. Haven't you been watching CBC? They're all saying, CTV said the same thing. We're in a global emergency right now. We need to take major drastic action, buddy. What are we going
to
do?
Went from global warming to climate change to climate crisis. It's no different than what they
acid
did.
Acid rain is falling down.
It's no different when they did what they did with the Cold War. right? And
you have to laugh at it. Because it's a joke.
Well, I talked to some students, grade 9 students, a bunch of them, and I asked them what percentage of what the teachers tell them they believe. And I was quite impressed by these kids because when I would ask these same basic questions 10, 15 years ago, I was getting a completely different answer. The kids would look at me like, what do you mean? You don't believe the teachers? Right? And this last group of kids I asked, they looked at each other and they kind of had a little, you know, chat. And they said, maybe 50%. And I thought, bingo, right? And I've talked to students in grade 10, 11 who've been asked to leave school and take correspondence courses because they started asking questions. And the school doesn't want you asking questions, and they don't want students asking questions because once the students start asking questions, other students might start asking questions. So they vacate them out of the school.
Can't have people thinking, Ron.
No, can't have anybody thinking. So, you know, we've got a problem. But the thing I like about Canada, Barry, the thing I really love about Canada is that, you know, we grow all the food that we require here. We manufacture everything we need here. You know, we design what we require. And, you know, our manufacturing industry is booming. Because it supplies all that is required for our people. Wait a minute, that's not right. We used to grow our own food. And we used to manufacture.
Hang on, Ron. I'm going to have a little pushback against that statement. Go ahead. I know where you're going, buddy. Go ahead.
You know, but see, the problem is that the youth, they have no memory bank of anything. That's the problem. That's the huge problem. They don't know what Canada was or could be. They're all hooked up into this LGBTQ crap and the global warming crap we weren't taught a lot, but they're being taught nothing except for this total 100% propaganda all the time.
Absolutely.
But they don't have a memory bank. So it's important that the people that understand. They really need to talk to the youth. We've got to bring the generations back together again. Because if we're fighting against each other, the youth fighting against old people like us, which I'm not old, but you're not old till you die. But we have to get the conversation going again. And when I spoke at that high school when I ran in the election in 2018, and I only run in these elections to see if anybody's waking up and to hold the feet to the fire of the politicians. And it's quite comical actually because they start sweating real bad when I start talking. We did the thing in the high school, and the teachers were pissed at me. The politicians were pissed at me. When I come down off the stage, there were some young people in wheelchairs and that. And, you know, I said, did you understand anything I said? And they just started high-fiving me, right? And I talked to some other students there who, you know, this inclusivity and that. We're getting the game, right? And the last all candidates meeting I was at, a young girl in grade 9, when it was over, we went downstairs to chat and that. And a young girl was in the hallway and she was looking at me and kept trying to get me away from the other, you know, people my age I was talking to. And when I, you know, she said, I want to talk to you. And I thought maybe she's going to start chewing me out because she's, you know, pegged the global warming and all this kind of garbage. And it was quite amazing because this girl in grade 9 understood it all, right? And she was trying to get her fellow students to understand, which was a bit of a problem. But she wasn't going to quit, you know? So we will win this, but we have to roll up our sleeves, get to work, and become very determined. They've been at this for centuries. And now, just now, okay, when I look at what people speak now and how they talk and what they talk about now compared to when I started doing online radio, 13 years ago or whatever, it's just a huge change. People maybe don't notice it, but it's a huge change. The number of people who now are beginning to understand what's at stake is growing exponentially. Mm-hmm. And we're not that far away from the snowball effect. But some people are becoming depressed because they've been trying to explain this stuff to people for years and years and years. And it's like beating your head on a wall in most cases. And I have to keep encouraging them that, you know, we're getting there now. Okay, so you can't quit. Okay, you're tired. Yeah, you wore out. Absolutely. But you can't quit. Because if we quit and they cross that finish line, then whose fault is it? Ours. It's our fault.
What I'll say about that, Ron, is that, you know, these thoughts have gone through my mind many, many times here in the last couple of years. And we see a rise in awareness in society. We see people now becoming more and more aware all the time. And you're right. We see people getting involved. We see some of the normal Joe Sixpacks that were sitting on their couch actually starting to get involved. But my question is to you, what are the elite going to do when it gets to that point where the snowball effect happens? And the reason I'm asking you this question is because one of the things I really take into consideration when I look at what could possibly happen in society, if we get to that point where we snowball and we absolutely are going to take the government back over, we're going to see catastrophic change, whatever happens, they have little toys put aside for that particular time. And that's what I like to talk about, because it's the other side of the story. What could they possibly do to us in a very short period of time to stifle any kind of rising against the government? And, of course, I come up with three or four answers to that question. And I like to explore those possibilities because some of them might sound like science fiction, but they're a reality. And, you know, you could talk about currency. We could talk about all kinds of things like nanotechnology, the absolute, what's going on with all kinds of things that they could possibly do to us with frequency. We've got to remember, too, in our conversations that what they possess for technology is 20 years ahead of what we know of. So that's right. Something I like to touch on that all the time, Ron, because, you know, some of it might sound like science fiction, but it's not. That they have technology that's way ahead of what we're allowed to know about. And what we know about now kind of has got me kind of very, very concerned when we look at the rollout of 5G. We look at what they can do with nanotechnology. One of the conversations I had with Roger Landry is, and I have a great deal of respect for what that man says because of his background. And he's telling me now that nanotechnology is to the point, Ron, where they can put radio transmitters in nano-sized particles. And if they're able to do that, then we've got to explore those options. Some I like to talk about. I know a lot of it might sound a little crazy, but it's not. Well, go ahead.
People find it. I don't own a cell phone. Because I don't like being tracked. And the other thing I don't like about cell phones, every time I go somewhere, if I have to go somewhere, I'm sitting in a room waiting. There's no conversation. Everybody's just staring at their stupid cell phones, which really irritates the hell out of me. Because you people need to be talking, and they need to be discussing things, and not staring at a stupid little screen. But, you know, the one lady, and I've said this before, I think, and she's just stuck in my head. I was up at the reserve one time, I don't know, probably 7 years ago or whatever. And I was really getting frustrated. I mean, I started telling people it was coming in the 70s, and the replies I was getting was just, you know, I can't get the F out of here, right? But I talked to this lady at the reserve, and I asked her if she understood the plan for whitey, meaning everybody's not native. And native people tend to be fairly quiet. And she didn't even say anything. She just looked at me and nodded yes. And, you know, I said, how do you get it so easy? And talking to Whitey's like beating your head on the wall. And she just looked at me and said, simple. We lived through it. Now it's your turn. And she hit it right on the head. I mean, she nailed that. Because exactly what they did to the natives, they're doing to us now. And, you know, they're driving people into the cities, which are just the reserves. And they're going to control your food. They're going to control every aspect of your life, just like in the Indian Act. So she hit that on the button. But what we got to understand is that you're absolutely correct. We're outgunned, big time. Okay? They have the technology, and I felt bad for the natives because they stood up to being run over, but yeah, they were outgunned. But what people have to understand is that this is the Third World War. Make no mistake about it. And this is a spiritual, psychological war. And they're fighting it on a spiritual, psychological level. So what they're trying to do with this Antifa and all this, you know, chaos crap on the streets is to incite violence. Because then they can justify bringing in the force, and we can't go there. Okay, we cannot allow ourselves to get into that position because that's where they're trying to get us to. Mm-hmm. So that when people sitting at home watching the TV see this scrap between these factions on the street and that, and the police come in and yada yada yada, they go, oh well, you know, the government loves us, right? which is what we can't get involved in. So it is psychological and it is spiritual. This country in America were founded on the idea of a creator, and they came to America and probably Canada with the Geneva Bible, of which was based really, I think, on Luther, who called out the Rome and called out the Catholic Church, and Luther took a real swipe at the Jews. There is a book that I have on my Facebook and on my blog, CanadianTruths.wordpress.com, and Rock the Boat Radio Facebook, the PDF of what Luther had to say about the Jews. But you don't ever hear much about Luther. But when they came here with the intent to get out from under the boot of tyranny. They came here to keep with the idea of keeping the weasels, the foxes, and the snakes the hell out of their new house. And unfortunately, over generations, as people were deceived and deceived and deceived by offer of benefits and stuff. Yeah, they became they got suckered, and the fox, the weasels, and the snakes now rule our house again. So how are we going to get the foxes, the weasels, and the snakes out of here, right? And the simple answer is to say no. That's the simple answer. Say no and mean it. That's very, very powerful. Because as long as we're, you know, caught up in their nonsense, we're caught up in their nonsense. We need to step away from their nonsense.
Most people are scared to say no.
Huh?
Most people are terrified of saying no, Ron.
Well, this is the problem.
They think the government's going to come and step on them the moment they say no.
Like our forefathers were not like that. And if you look at the history of Canada, when our forefathers first came here and they were building their villages and their towns and that, and you had the Hudson's Bay Company, and when our forefathers started to run into people from the Hudson's Bay Company, the Hudson's Bay Company started telling them what they could and couldn't do. Our forefathers were smart enough to say, we don't work for you, shove off. Mm-hmm. And that is when, because the Hudson's Bay Company is no different than Canada. The Hudson's Bay Company had its own courts and it had its own rules and regulations and so on and so forth, and its own laws. When our forefathers began to tell the Hudson's Bay Company to take a hike, that's when the Hudson's Bay Company got back to England and said, we understand you started up this legislative thing, parliament thing. How's that working? great. They don't get it. Can we have something like that? Yeah, we'll send some people over. This is the foundation of Canada. Make no mistake about it. Mm-hmm. So who founded Canada? 9 lawyers, the father of Confederation was a lawyer and a Freemason. Okay, no. So all like I talked to a guy from a high up guy in person from the Attorney General's office, and we had this discussion. And when I was done with it, a high level OPP was at the courthouse at the same time. We kept trying to get the guy away from me, get the guy away from me. And the AG guy says, "No, I want to hear what Ron's got to say." And when the cop came in the last time, and he wasn't in a uniform, he was in a high end suit, came in. The guy from the AG's office looked at the cop and said, "You know what? Ron's absolutely correct. Canada is nothing more than a rebranded freaking Hudson's Bay Company, which it isn't. That's what it is. It's a corporation. It's always been a corporation. And the rules and the regulations put on you are put on the entity that they created, the lawyers did. So we don't even live our lives as men and women, and we live as the corporate entity they created. And that's unfortunate because we talk about
a solution to that and something that you've talked about a lot, and that solution has to start in the local communities. And
I give you an example, Barry.
Yeah,
and I did this before, but I want your listeners to understand it, because when you say people are afraid to say no, you're absolutely correct. But here is an example of saying no that worked, and it's from where my family's from, which is just across the Ottawa River into Quebec, and it's a small town, and it's English French, and if you're French, you put up a French sign. If you're English, you put up an English sign. Everybody got along fine, no problemos. And then the Quebec language law came in. And these pencil necks, I call them, came into the town and explained to the people in that little town that they had to change their signs to French only. And the people in that little town, who still have a spine today, told them to shove off. We're not changing our signs. Well, you have to, because we made a new law. Didn't ask us. Okay, we didn't consent to none of this stuff. You didn't ask us. You didn't inform us. You just want to march in here and tell us what we're going to do. No. So they went away. And I always tell people this. Once you say no to them, they go away. Then they come back, right, and try to get into a negotiation again. Well, you already won. You've already said no. You don't get back into negotiation with them, because that's how they sucker you back in. And so they came back again, and they had an idea. Said, okay, you don't have to change all the signs. You can still have English, but you have to have the French in huge fonts, and if you want to use English underneath, you can use teeny-weeny little fonts. And the people of the town, who already told them no, said, no thanks. We're happy the way we are. Don't come in here and tell us how we're going to run our town. So they went away again. They came back one more time. This time when they came back, and it blew me away, Barry, because I was living in either Calgary or Edmonton at the time, and I turned on the TV, and they talk about Shawville, Quebec, and I'm thinking, what the hell? I mean, this is a little dick-ass town. I mean, it means nothing. What's going on? And when the pencil necks came back the last time, basically the town came out. They weren't protesting. They were very quiet about it. But you had old people in walkers and young families pushing baby buggies and that. And they basically just walked these clowns to the edge of town and said, don't come back. As far as I know, they still got the signage they want. So the word no is extraordinarily powerful. And you know, there's a couple of things that we failed with. You know, it says, take heed, you're not deceived. Well, we really blew that one big time. And woe on to you lawyers, because they're the ones that make the crap up in their heads and then dump it onto us, which all it does is enslave us further and take your labor out of your pocket and puts it into their pockets. If you look who's making all the money, it's the people pushing the paper. And those are the people that deceived you.
As long as you keep going to work every day and paying your taxes, you're fine.
It makes no sense, because we're not benefiting.
Of course not.
Right? They're benefiting. We're not benefiting.
Well, where do we benefit from anything that they do? Anything. Right. You talk about any aspect, we don't benefit.
Right. So we basically have to become real men and women again. Now, you work in construction. I've worked in construction. I was starting a construction company here in the process of it. But you know, I'm really disappointed with construction workers, because I thought they're tough guys. And they're spaghetti, too. You know, now here in Ontario, you have to get these stickers to put on your ladder. You have to take a course to walk up a ladder. And I'm saying to these guys, so what will you put up with this garbage for? Well, we don't want to get in trouble. Well, can you not say no? You know, like when they came to the site, the health guy or the safety inspectors, and we were building a house, and they come in, and all the guys on the job were nervous as hell because they weren't wearing work boots, a lot of them, and they weren't wearing hard hats. And I go down to see the pencil neck, and I go, "What's up?" Well, you're breaking the rules. No, I'm not. Well, yeah, you got to have hard hats and work boots. Says who? Well, it says here on this piece of paper. And? Now, I want you to listen to me for a minute, son. Who's responsible for my safety? That piece of paper or me? Me. Okay? So we're putting up trusses now. We're safer in running the trusses in sneakers and wearing work boots. And when you run in between the trusses, the guys are putting the stringers down, wearing hard hats, are going to be banging their heads all the time, because a hard hat's that much higher than your head. You know where the hell your head's at. So we are in charge of our safety, not you, not some asinine lawyer that wrote up some asinine legal
regulation.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, I know.
So you have to learn to say no. And what happens when you say no? They go away. Because they're always looking for the low-hanging fruit.
Exactly.
When I was, I did up a website one time when I was being given a hard time when I was renovating this place. And I run the building inspectors out of here. I worked with them for a while, but they weren't making any sense. So I just put up a website, and I told them, I said, nobody's getting this town without getting through my website first. Excuse me. I went to get a coffee one day, and a lady's standing at the counter, and she says, "Is that your website?" And I said, "I don't know." I said, "I build websites for other people." And she goes, no, the one about your house. I said, "Oh, yeah, I just put that up, just keep track of crap." And this is a very fearful woman. She's a farm woman working at Tim Hortons, and they're renovating their house, and she said, "You know, exactly what you're saying is happening to us. The building inspector comes in, they tell us they want this done this way, so we do it. Then another one comes in and says, oh, the head building inspector doesn't like that idea. You're going to have to tear it apart and do it this way." And she says, "It's costing us all kinds of time and money." And then I read what you wrote, and I've never done anything like this in my life before. It's about a 55-year-old woman. And she said, after reading what you wrote, she said, "When the building inspector came in, I walked out and I looked at him and I said, 'Is that your truck?' And he goes, 'You know it is.' And she said, 'I just looked at him and said, you got 5 minutes to get off my land. You're going to have 4 flat tires and I ain't driving you back to town.'" And I said, "How'd that work out?" She said, "I've never seen a building inspector since." This is the power. If you have a spine.
Yeah.
Right?
But people have lost that, Ron. They really
have. I know, but we have to grow it back. And we
can't. There's a lot of reasons. You know, but there's multiple reasons why people have lost their spines. And really, when you get down to it, the fact that we are so sick now as a civilization, that our immune systems are where they're at, that our minds are full of heavy metals, that our bodies are full of heavy metals, we're being attacked, I think really has a lot to do with the state of the human mind, man. Because most Canadians just
drugs.
I ask Canadians, where are the men with intestinal fortitude? If this happened when my dad was young, if this was going on, every Canadian man in the country would be standing up and they'd be stomping down to CBC. All I'm saying, Ron, is there's multiple reasons why
back in the 70s, I got looking at this stuff. I mean, we were partying hardy. Don't get me wrong. We were having a really good time, but you also can think at the same time. And what really bothered me was when they came out with the unemployment, the new unemployment thing they had at the time, which had these little IBM punch cards, and you would write yes, yes, no, yes. I forget what the questions were, but that was the answers. And put it in an envelope and send it away, and in 2 weeks you get a check. And what they did was you only had to work 8 weeks a year, and you could collect POGI the rest of the year. Now, I collected, I think, 3 checks, and then it dawned on me that this is designed for a reason, and it's to make people weak, to become dependent upon the government. And I told my friends, I said, this is a con game going on here, right? What they did from that time on, through all of these government benefits in that, is soften the people up to become dependent upon the government. And what I told them in the 70s, I said, you know, when you look at Canada the way it's set up, all it is right now is a beneficial dictatorship, so to speak.
Right.
And they're going to soften you up so that when they come at you, you don't know how to deal with it, because you become soft and you become dependent upon them, not you, right? So, yes, and with the pharmaceuticals, I run into friends of mine the same age as me today, and, like, there's nobody home. Mm. And we'd be talking, you know, and they say, well, I'm taking this, and then I have to take this because of the reaction of this and that for this. You know, we're talking, and I'm thinking, Jesus. I mean, these were wild men when they were young. And now they're docile old men. And then they go to me, what are you taking? I don't take nothing.
Yeah,
and it actually freaks them out.
What?
I'm not taking anything.
What do you mean you're not taking anything?
Yeah.
Chaga. So, Ron,
you're right. They have filled our bodies full of garbage.
You
know,
do.
And it weakens people, and it makes them dependent. And that's what we have. And people call them sheep, and that I don't like calling people sheep, but the people have been suckered, plain and simple. They've been deceived and suckered. And we got to get by that. And we got to this is the reason we got to get to the young people. Okay. We got to get them on board, because if we don't get them on board, you know, we probably got 20, maybe 30 years left to live. We messed up. Okay, all the bitching, complaining about politics and everything else doesn't matter a damn.
Well, you know, they talk about global emergency. This whole global scam. You know, it's a scam, and I know it's a scam. But we do actually have a lot of problems right now on this planet that I would classify as emergencies. And you're right, Ron. To me, right now, the most important thing is to try to reach the young people and give them proper information.
My attitude is simple. The only place that you can make change, okay, the only place you can make change, and what they did with this international media then, okay, they're always telling you stories from these different places, which you don't even know whether they're true or not, but that you can't affect it, but it affects you. It gets in your head. So you're thinking about something that happened somewhere you can't do nothing about. And it's already happened. It's over. No, you can't do nothing about it. So they just, it's all distraction. The only place that you can make any change, positive change, is where your feet are. Okay, and that's your neighborhood. That's your town. That's your municipality. That's the only place that you have the opportunity to speak to people one-on-one, okay, and teach them the realities that we're facing and the realities that their children and grandchildren are facing. That's the PowerPoint. That's the Achilles heel. It's not the federal. It's not the provincial. It's the local level. That's where they're implementing all this garbage at, the local level. Now, when most people think, that their municipality, just the job of the municipality is to make sure the water's good, the sewers work, the roads are plowed, the parks are mowed in the summertime, and the ball diamond works. That's what people think the municipality's job is. Very few people understand what the municipality's actually up to, which is really outside the realm of their duties, right? They have become the change agents, making it a psychological war between them and us. And we have to, just like they did in that little town in Quebec, right, where those people all knew each other closely. Most of them were interrelated because it's a small place, and they all knew their grandmas and their grandpas and their great grandmas and their grandpas. And it was still connected. They knew right from wrong. And they knew how to say no. And that's what we have to teach the people in our municipalities. Now, I'll tell you, this is what really disturbs me. When they bring these stupid drag queens into this little town, most of the people will just stay at home and turn a blind eye to what's going on. Like you said, in the past, our forefathers would have been down there playing a beat on or something. Mm-hmm. But most of the people now, they don't agree with it. Don't get me wrong. They don't agree with these drag queens coming here and talking to these little children. They don't agree with it, but they're afraid to say anything about it. The people live in fear. They've been taught to be fearful. And we have to get rid of that somehow. We have to get the people, you know, we have to strengthen our people. I don't know what you can say. I mean, there's no country that is better off than ours anywhere. Second largest landmass. Nobody lives here. Okay. 36 million people in the second largest landmass country on the planet. And we're watching more and more people living on the streets, more and more people living in tents and living in vans and whatnot. People can't afford their homes anymore. People that bought a home can't stay in them anymore because of the rising taxes, water bills, electricity bills, and so on and so forth. Because
the richest country in the world.
Right. So the question becomes, why are we putting up with this garbage? I mean, think about it. I mean, California, and I've said this before, California. Pick up California, bring it over in Ontario, and you stuff it into the District of Kenora, and it fits nicely. You can take Japan and bring it over and dump it into the District of Kenora, and it fits with extra space. Now, California is 40 million people. Most of California is empty. Yet you can take that entire population of California and dump it in the District of Kenora. That means look at the resources that we have for the people of this country, and we're listening to these dumbass politicians. You know, I mean, we got to get by this, and we have got to be men and women again, right? Who care about our communities, not for the international agendas, but for our agendas. We don't need the international. I have a young guy, I got to get him on the show sometime, Travis from Saskatchewan, who started the Nationalist Party, I think it is, who's been just hammered, right? And the upside of him is he's 28 years old. Now, well, I was just telling him, you know, you made a mistake by calling your party the Nationalist Party, okay, because he's getting reamed. If you had called it the International Party, okay, you would have been played up on all the media as a positive.
Yeah, look at this guy.
Right.
He's inclusive.
Right.
Inclusive.
Yeah, but if you say national, you're screwed.
Yeah, well, I know. I was following that one. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we have to change the narrative, right? And the only people that are going to change the narrative is us, okay? This isn't our ball game. We fail, our fault. They win, our fault, okay? We cannot point fingers at politicians. They're just puppets, okay? They're evil little buggers, and they're not working for us. But we have to get moving, okay? And like I said, the only place that you really have power is where your boots are. And we have to start joining our municipalities together with strong people. And then we stand and we say no. And we mean it. And
good point.
We will change the narrative. Once the narrative's changed, it's over. They lose. Our country. We built it.
Well, we better,
everything in here.
You better get our act together quick, Tom, because they're going forward at light speed.
Well, they're moving as fast as they can, but the upside of them moving fast is they're waking more people by the hour.
Well, they
are. That's the upside of it.
So something's going to give here in the near future, and it's going to be interesting to see where it all goes. But we definitely know that something's going to give, and we'll leave that for another show. Huh?
Yeah, I want to send you out some pictures of me with the drag queens there down at the library. It was sweet.
Oh, man, that touches a bone with me, I'll tell you, my friend. I watched a video, Ron, and I asked myself, I posted it on my Facebook pages with some really hard questions, that we as a society, have we reached that point that we're so demoralized that we allow drag queens to come into a library and dance around with 6- and 7-year-old children.
Yeah.
And I watched a video, Ron, and it shocked me. These drag queens are allowed to go up and body gyrate these 6- and 7-year-old kids. What the heck is going on in our society, Ron? Have we reached that point? It's something that I really am asking myself some very, very strong questions.
Well, their plan was to make people weak over X number of generations, which they've accomplished.
This is
and now our job is to make people strong again. Okay,
well,
that's our job.
Get on it. Better get on it.
Yeah, we've got to get our sleeves rolled up and get to it. So,
hey, well, we're down to the last 5 minutes, Ron. Yeah. So what I'm going to do before we shut out the show is I'm going to let people you plug your show and where people can find you and where they can hear you talk on your own radio show called Rock the Boat. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do a show Sunday, noon Eastern Standard Time, noon till 2. On Revolution Radio, Studio B, and I do have an old blog I fired up again. I didn't post much on it lately because I got a notice some years ago. I used to get thousands of hits a day on my blog, and then I got a notice, and this is a true story. I got a notice that said the Vatican is now following your updates, and my hits went in the toilet. So I just started posting on it again. But it's called CanadianTruths.wordpress.com, and my Facebook is Rock the Boat Radio Facebook. So
well,
lots of information on all those places.
You know, you've hit the big time if the Vatican's watching you.
I've run in elections. I ran for mayor last year, and during the election, I was arrested. For assault and resisting arrest, which was completely false. Even the reporters at the All Candidates meeting were coming up and saying, this is complete crap, man. This is a total hit. Well, yeah, because once they know, they sure as hell don't want you being the mayor. And that's why I say we have to get people together so that we can take control of these municipal halls. And which we're going to do. I've been talking to some people in Ontario here now who are finally starting to understand that the power is where your boots are. The rest of it you can't control. You can control where your boots are. And that's what we got to start working hard.
Exactly, Ron. And if we don't get in there, you know, people with nefarious intentions for the future of the country will.
Well, I think like here in Ontario, we've got 3 years till next municipal election, and I do believe that we can roust up the people and get them trained and put them in place. And once we have control of the municipal council, once we have a control of 20, 30 municipal councils, then we can start saying no. And we've got to do it. It's ours. I just want to leave people with this. Do not get depressed, okay? Do not get disenfranchised, okay? You are living right now in the most interesting times in centuries, okay? Grab it, okay? We got to go with it, and we can get it done. I mean, if Martin Luther back in the 1500s could put the boots to Rome the way he did, one man, that us working together can accomplish the same damn thing. So don't get depressed and don't get fearful. That's what they depend on. Non-fearful people they're afraid of. People who know and people who have knowledge they're afraid of. Because they know what they're doing is completely wrong. So,
yeah, anyways. we're in for the battle of our life right now, Ron.
Right.
I think we're into one of the most exciting and dangerous times. But
it's a fantastic time to be alive.
It's also a very dangerous time, but we have
you can walk out in front of a bus anytime. Life is dangerous from the time you're born, but you don't want to be fearful about it.
I'm not standing here. I'm just trying to make people aware. That's what we're here for.
Anyways, I'm going to go and try and get that pie finished.
Okay, well, send it. You've got my address there. You want to relay it to me. I'll probably get it by tomorrow night, and maybe it'll still be warm.
Yeah, and please do look at that stuff I sent you.
I'll have a boo at it, Ron.
I think
I'll really put
some information into you.
I will look at it, my friend. Thanks for coming in today, Ron. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you, Barry. Okay, take care.
Okay, folks. Well, what I try to do in my show, folks, is I try to bring in lots of different opinions about a lot of different things, even though some of them I don't agree with. I love to hear people's opinions that basically are on the same page as me. And I hope I've done that the first hour and my second hour. So,
I have lots of scraps with lots of people who I really have a lot of respect for, and they respect me.
Well,
but we can get into some pretty wild conversations, but it's not negative, it's positive, because both of us take something from it.
Absolutely.
Okay? Right. So,
okay, folks, well, that's the end of the show for this week, folks. Thanks for joining in, and I'll be back next week, same time, same place. I want to thank you for joining in, and God bless you all. Have a great week. I'm going to be up in the bush for this the next 4 or 5 days, so back on the internet till probably Friday. So I'll look for you then, and I'll be around for the show next week. I'll see you then. Have a great week. Bye for now.
Take care, Barry.